hosts, Eddie Webb, and with me are Matthew Dawkins.
Hello.
And Dixie Cochran.
What is this radio voice you're doing right now, Eddie? Like, what is this?
I know, it's quite low and moody, isn't it?
Welcome to NPR.
Yeah, like, this is definitely your pure public radio voice.
No,
it's very some soothing. Of it, I'm going to take a nap.
So interesting, actually, start writing the digressions. I actually did study radio and television broadcast in college before I dropped out of college for a variety of stupid reasons. And one of them was, you know, I would constantly get criticisms, shocking no one, that I talked too fast. So I actually did a little bit of voice therapy when I was in college. And so I developed this kind of generic NPR voice that I rebelled against because I didn't like it. And then over years, I found, okay, well, I do talk really fast. And so when I try to intentionally not talk fast, my voice inadvertently slides to that. So
I like it. I think that if there was a nuclear holocaust going on, I would want to hear your voice on the radio.
Tokyo has been destroyed. Please exit to Area 45.
Do not panic.
Yes. But speaking of not panicking, today, actually, it's nothing to do with that segue, but...
Yeah, what?
I'm panicking now, Eddie.
I don't know.
Write this ship right now.
Anyway, so speaking of nothing about nuclear disasters, today we do have an interview with one of our newer freelancers, Clara Herbel. I'm pretty sure I didn't get that right, and I'm not going to get it right in the interview either, but that's okay. She knows that.
Also, I feel like... So I did the blog while y'all were gone at UK Games Expo, and I did initially spell her name correctly. There's a there's an O with a line through it. I don't know what that's called. You think I would, but I don't. Well, no, there's a name for the accent mark. Anyway, I spelled it correctly, and then the blog turned it into gibberish. So Clara, if you saw the blog and saw that your name was spelled wrong, I'm really sorry. I did it so it looked better.
Right. Yeah, because fonts sometimes don't like those Danish characters.
So that's something else you need to know when we put this up on the website. Like, you can't spell her name properly.
Right. Cause... Yeah, that's a good reason. I'll put the show notes up, so I'll run into that.
Exactly, because the blog will eat them. It'll be like A with like a tilde over it, and then like a space, and then like a backwards E. And I'm like, that's not what I wrote.
Here's some words.
Linguistics, what an interesting subject, because Danish has nine vowels, obviously, and I say obviously, not everyone knows that.
Everyone
knows that, but it's one of the things we run into trouble with sometimes when writing our books or turning them into PDFs or into print, because not every single program has every single language on it, or every letter construction and the like. So it's one of those things. Oh, sorry, Eddie. But yeah, it's one of those things you have to look out for when you're developing work for writers like Clara, or when you're developing work that has language like this in it, because you certainly don't want to miscredit the author, and at the same time, you want to be as true as you can to the subject matter.
No, absolutely. And I was just going to say that we actually had a conversation about that, because when we started working on Scion in Trinity, I pointed out, it's like, these are both games that have a lot of unusual characters. The ligature for Aeon specifically was a big point in Trinity.
Especially Scion. Like, there's so many special characters in the gods' names, because we were trying to be as accurate as possible.
Right. So, I mean, Mike had to shop around to try to find a font that had most of those characters that still looked good within our general house style of how we make our books.
Yeah.
And even then, still, he sometimes has to kind of fudge things or bring in other fonts or do layout magic to make that actually work correctly. So it is a challenge. It is a risky thing.
I think it's on the errata, but there actually is a place in Scion Hero, because I had to reference it a lot recently, where there is a box where there should have been a character. And I'm great, cool.
And I've had the exact same thing in Book of Oblivion for Wraith, because we've dealt with the underworlds for many different nations, many different cultures. And obviously, it's the exact same issue. But, you know, we do what we can, and that's why the errata process is particularly useful.
Exactly. So we didn't talk to Clara about any of that.
It's about her name.
It is about her name.
You're centering the whole conversation on Clara's name.
The nuclear disaster, Clara.
What?
I thought that was a direct link to what we were speaking about before. I missed something, clearly.
The past 2 minutes of conversation, apparently. Matthew's just an autopilot. We're still learning how to talk, as we talked about last week's. So we're still figuring out how to word.
I've been to a museum with Clara once in Denmark, and it was a very good museum in City of Odense. In a lot of the exhibits were interactive, and this does have a point on the subject of nuclear disasters. I'm making a nice circular link here. So it had this history display in it where you got to basically shoot down nuclear missiles heading towards Scandinavia from Russia. This sort of video game esque like thing was presumably installed around the time the Cold War was still raging, and it's still perfectly interactive. It's very simple in its design, but yeah, it's all about how likely it would be that missile silos in Denmark and Sweden and Norway would be able to shoot down nukes being fired at them from Russia. So yeah, now there you go. I have had an experience of nuclear disasters with Clara.
That is good to know. So we'll just go right into the interview. And we're here with my wonderful co-host, Matthew Dawkins.
Hello.
And we are here with, and I've already forgotten how to pronounce last name again, even though I asked you yesterday.
So it isn't that easy. What?
It's all right. It's every single person that ever interviewed me said the same thing. It's all right. It's Clara Horskjær. Happy.
Thank you.
Yeah. You can just call me Clara. Okay. Lady Gamer. Some people know me.
Yeah, that's true. There's a story. Mm-hmm. So Clara is the Lady Gamer.
And the only one.
Well, and I'm the Gentleman Gamer. So there you go. There's a strange piece of synchronicity.
Did not catch that before.
Mm.
So yes, we are at UK Game Expo. We have commandeered a gaming room before the gamers show up. So we are going to have a very tight time box episode before people get me to actually use the table. Although we're actually at the table, you're going to be running your vampire game in an hour. Usually for the podcast, we generally can just talk about where you started. So, I mean, how did you get into being a freelancer?
I was actually, I was talking with Matthew before anything else, and he was the one offering me to send in an application as a writer of Onyx Path, and I never really, and this is going to be so horrible for people who actually have the dream of becoming an RPG writer, but I never had that dream. Because I never thought I was good enough, you know. I never thought, well, I write RPGs, I love it, but I don't think I'm good enough.
Right.
I don't think that my writing is ever going to be something professional at all. But Matthew thought differently, and he actually saw potential in me, and he offered me, as anyone else, to send an application, and I did. And that's how everything really started.
And crucially, Clara followed the guidelines, as we have stressed many a time.
What?
But no, that is exactly how it happened. I was familiar with Clara's writing for her own games, and much like with many of the other freelancers I've encouraged to submit, whether it's Clara, John Burke, we've had several, in fact, who I know can write, but I would rather they followed the procedure.
Right.
And it's also, it's good practice. It's good practice for prospective writers to follow guidelines, our guidelines, and also essentially submit themselves to the same tests, in effect, that I think we do with everyone.
So, keying off something you just mentioned, and I should preface by saying, actually, not that familiar with your career, so this is actually just as much me genuinely asking you questions, not the prepared, tell me about yourself that I already know.
Mm-hmm.
So you had your professional writer before then, this, right? Or,
no,
or just a good writer?
Yeah, I was just, I was a writer. I
obviously, Matthew hired you, so at least you're not terrible.
I guess that's a mark of quality. But no, I was never a professional writer, but I always loved to write.
Okay.
I've been writing since I was very young. And it's just something that always came natural to me. And
oh,
I
really
enjoyed putting my thoughts onto paper.
Mm-hmm.
But I never wanted to share with anyone because I never thought I would be good enough. You know, my writing would be good enough. My teacher thought I was good enough, but that's not really always a qualification.
Sure.
But yeah, so it has a lot to do with my own insecurities about myself, I guess. So that's something writing really helped me, you know, tackle as well.
Your insecurities?
Yeah. Because all of a sudden people are actually running my games and people are enjoying my games. I'm getting reviews that are positive, and mm-hmm. I would never in a million years have thought that that would happen.
Right.
Yeah. So that actually helped me break out a bit.
That's really interesting. I mean, I think it's a bit of a sweeping statement, but I think it's fair to say that a lot of writers are insecure about their own writing. Mm-hmm. And you really, I know for me, it was a case of having had someone else come out outside of me who wasn't a friend, wasn't a relative, wasn't, like I said, a teacher. I genuinely enjoy this play. I'd like to see more of it. So it's not surprising to me that you were insecure. I've been doing this for over a decade, and I still get, I was talking about the other day, I still get insecure and worried about something. But you're right, it is validating, I think, to go, oh, hey, someone who doesn't know me thinks this is good.
Yeah.
And that helps you to do the next one, the next one, the next one.
It's a double-edged sword, though, isn't it? The idea of reading reviews of your own work. It can be incredibly validating, but then you get the one person who is determined to pick a hole in everything you've written. And that is actually fine. Criticism is fine. But it can be a severe wound that it takes a while for your confidence to recover from.
It's one of the things that I definitely always like to prefer to put the term constructive there. Because anyone can criticize anything. Before we record live, we were talking about V for Vendetta, for example, and we had very strong opinions about the movie that we're probably not going to go into now, but that's just criticism. Anyone can criticize anything. Constructive criticism is different. So being able to say, and that's where ideally a developer would have some kind of value. It's like, you know, developer, really red lines are constructive criticism. Mm-hmm. You could do more of this, you could do less of this, I really like this, I don't like that. And I know it's something that Matthew is fantastic at, having been, him being my developer, is that kind of constructive criticism. But you're right, for people online who don't have that skill set, just to say, well, this is crap. What they're in their head are saying is, I didn't enjoy this, I didn't find this entertaining, but it's not the same thing as, this is objectively terrible.
No.
And that, you're right, that can be challenging, but it is leavened by the fact that when you hear more praise than critique.
I think it's something to do with, knowing where people are coming from, really.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people, some people will criticize just to criticize, but I think a vast majority do it because they are expressing some sort of dismay about the game. There is something about it they do not like.
And they don't have the language for it.
Yeah, maybe they're not good enough to communicate that. And that's why you have to investigate and actually dive deeper into the wound until it hurts. You have to dig deeper in to find the source, and that can help you make your games better. And we're talking about validation too, really. Validation from other people is so important, but I also think what was really important for me was seeing validation through my own work and through my own development in writing. Seeing myself become better and better and better and better was really important to me, because that taught me that not only can I learn, but I'm actually getting better from my own perspective and other people's perspectives. So that's why having a good developer in a book is also important, because you get some good constructive feedback.
I agree. So a lot of the people we bring on the podcast are usually established finishers. Like I said, either they've been doing it for a long time, or they've always wanted to do it, and now they're just starting to do it. So it's interesting for me to have someone here who kind of just suddenly fell into it, as it were. not by accident, but rather it's the, oh, hey, let me try this, and oh, this is actually something I enjoy. Yeah. So how has that change been for you, mentally moving from, I don't think it's the thing I can do, to this is actually something that seems like it's rewarding and validating?
I mean, it's made me realize a lot of things about myself, because I think if you are, you know, if you are looking into becoming a RPG writer, you definitely know that part of yourself. You've perused that part of yourself. You kind of dived into that part of yourself, but I didn't even know that I had that part of myself.
Interesting.
So it's something I'm just diving into now, and it's just something I'm discovering now. And it's just like finding a new part of myself. It sounds so, but it kind of is, really. It's finding a new way to express my creativity.
Do you have any aspirations following writing? You know, is there any particular objective that you have in mind? Now that you've just got onto the ladder, and it could be something as simple as you just want to write for more games, you know, build up a nice portfolio.
Grab the ladder, reaching for the briefcase.
Yeah, exactly. grab that money in the
bank. Control life's path.
Yeah, sorry,
take
Rich.
Take it over. Sorry, Rich.
Sorry, Rich.
But no, is there anything in particular that you've got your mind set on as an objective? And it's all right if you don't.
Well, I have been looking into maybe some developing at some point. Okay. I would love to have a project I can put my own, you know, mark on in a way, in another way than being a writer. Well, I would love to see if I have some good abilities there, because that's a part of me again that I haven't discovered. So that would be great to try. So that's something I'm aiming for.
Okay. Well, we can see how that comes along, certainly.
I mean, well, this is now a job in
track. Right, yeah. Oh, look at the balance. How did it show up? But, I mean, so let's kind of go through your resume, because I don't think I'm entirely familiar. What have you worked on so far for us?
Well, I've worked for Contagion Chronicle.
Right.
And I work for Dark Arrows too.
Okay.
I've worked on Chicago by Night.
Right.
I've worked for Chasing Dreaming.
Okay.
Werewolf the Forsaken.
Okay.
Mummy the Curse.
Mummy the Curse Second Edition.
Mm-hmm.
And some games outside of Onyx Park.
Yeah, I've worked on Cults.
Oh, okay.
Well,
same book as you, Eddie.
Yes.
Right, yes.
Wherever that book is.
And currently I'm working on Fall of London as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
For Modiphius. And yes. You worked for Make Believe.
That's true.
Yeah, see, I was given Clara's business card for the first time at the beginning of this convention, so now I know everything she's worked on.
Everything, yeah.
Oh, see, if I had looked at that, I would have known that.
But Eddie didn't.
I just put it away.
Yeah. Mentally filed.
Oh my god, I am the fucking worst. So you just started like a year and a half, 2 years ago?
Yeah, a year and a half, really.
Mm-hmm. So whenever Contagion started.
Yes. Right. So Contagion was your first book.
It was quite a mouthful.
Yeah, for a first project, a big crossover book was maybe not the easiest assignment to take on.
It was not the easiest assignment.
No. So it's been quite a lot. It's been a fruitful year.
Yeah.
Years, yeah.
And that's one thing I'm finding interesting is that you went from 0 to 60, that's an Americanism. You went very quickly, very fast.
Yeah.
Was that exciting? Was that scary? A little bit of both?
I mean, it was everything, really. It was just a mix of emotion. It was exciting, definitely exciting to actually write for games that I've been loving for years.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big honor, too. But that also puts a pressure on you, because you are actually representing a franchise. You're representing a game for other people. So that puts immense pressure on you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also scary, because what if you fail? What if you're not good enough? And it was also stressful, I have to be honest.
Really?
Yeah, because I have a tendency to just take on work because I love what I do.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know my own limits. And that's something I've learned too.
Good point.
Knowing my own limits, because I'm a full-time nurse.
Right.
Beside all this. So I actually, a couple of months ago, took on a lot of work. And it would be just as much as you working with this as your main thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I had almost two full-time jobs at the same time. And forcing creativity is horrible. I hate that. But sometimes you feel like you have to because you have a deadline.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely dark sides to this career path.
But I'd say that's especially common early on. There's the fear that freelance writers often have, and I guess it's the same in any self-employed industry, where if you take a break, if you slow down, put your feet on the gas, the brakes for a little while.
gas and, over the edge.
Yeah, no, that's the wrong thing to do. But if you put the brakes on for a little while, you gain the fear of, oh, well, what if I'll be forgotten? What if, having turned down a couple of assignments, I won't be approached again?
Yep.
And that's a different brand of confidence that, I mean, speaking as I know you personally, that's the kind of thing you need to build up.
Yeah.
It's something a lot of writers need to build up. And it's very easy for me to say, because I know that there have been occasions, sometimes recently, where I've taken on a bit too much. And I'm sure I'm sure Eddie has done the exact same thing.
Absolutely have.
Knowing how to balance staying within the industry but not drowning in the industry.
Yeah.
And I know I've talked about this before, but I mean, the scariest thing is turning down work in the world.
It really is.
And especially when you don't have a good reason. I feel like there's a certain amount of, oh, I'm going to be in hospital, or I'm going to be out of the country or whatever, so I can't take it on the timeline. And so you feel like, I'm not really turning it down. Circumstances prevent me from doing it. But being able to tell people, that's not enough money, that's not an assignment I'm interested in, that's not going to make my career any better, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
And it's I don't think that it gets a little better, but I don't think it ever goes away. I mean, I've turned down more work in the past 6 months than I have in my entire career because I just have too much work. And so it's like, you've got to make this worth my while. And it's scary and frustrating because your instinct is always, oh, I've got to do more. But you're right. If you don't know your limits, you will do more damage to yourself. You burn out. Yes. You make yourself sick. Both of your jobs suffer in your case. Yeah. So you've got to know, I know how much I can do. This is my outward amount. And I've just got to say no.
Yeah. And that's something, you know, you mentioned I didn't know that. So I had to push that limit to find it.
Right.
Like I had to push myself all the way to like the breaking point where I was getting sick from all the work.
And then we had a conversation.
And that's where I learned, okay, well now I know how much I can take on. And when you do that, it's actually kind of a relief. It's still scary, but it's a relief because now you can actually focus your creativity entirely on the few projects you have and do them great.
Yep.
So you make it more about quality than quantity.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I'm gonna shift gears a little bit, and I think it's appropriate because we're at this show to kind of talk about it. One thing I've heard consistently from European freelancers is the difficulty in networking, because so much of the industry is US-based and so much of the US-based business is dealt with face-to-face work at conventions. Do you think that's still a true situation? Have you felt that, or is it maybe not as much for shows like UK Game Expo? It feels a little less isolating. I'm curious how you feel about that, especially because you're breaking in.
Yeah, well, I'm just... honestly, I haven't been doing much of branching out and trying to like talk to other companies at all because I felt like I've had enough on my plate.
That's fair.
But I can definitely see the point in that now that I think about it, because we don't have a lot of big conventions. We do have a big one in Scandinavia and we have a few big ones in Denmark, but it's rare. And there's not a lot of international companies attending that at all. There's a lot of Danish companies, and that's fine too, but it's limited.
Right.
You know? So yeah, I can definitely see that. I think that, you know, I think you should think about is maybe branching out just online. Just send them a message. Just say, hey, hello, my name is blah 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 and I'm a freelance writer, and it's not the same and it doesn't present you with the same opportunity at all.
Right.
But if that's the only thing you have,
right,
that's what you need to go for.
But I mean, you stepped started because of networking, because you had a friendship with Matthew beforehand, and that friendship is what helped you. He encouraged you to put the submission and whatnot. So I mean, it does show the value of networking, but I think on a larger level, it shows the value of making friends. I use the word networking because that is the common term, but I really don't think that's how it works in the industry, right? It's, you know, more of the Matthew. I mean, when we first met, I mean, we met through the industry, but also we started talking primarily because of like wrestling and other common events, and that our friendship grew as a result of that.
Yeah, I think I remember the first message I ever sent you, and it wasn't even vampire related.
I know.
Was it Sherlock Holmes related?
You know what? It might have been, actually.
Yeah.
But onto more fun things.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but that does segue into where I want to go, which is more fun.
Ooh.
I'm curious in your thoughts on this, because you're just now starting to, even at the show, meet some of the people you work with.
Yeah.
And one thing.
Who's your favorite?
Rich.
She's smart. She's good.
Yeah, she'll go far in this industry.
The guy who pays my checks, him. But I think. Especially as you get older on the industry, you have the moment of why am I doing this, right? Mm. When you have harassment, when you have these kinds of moments, you kind of go, is it worthwhile?
Yeah.
But then you spend time with colleagues or with fans, and you know they'll do things like, you know, I really love what you did. I've had people come up to me talking about how my work has helped them to come out to their parents or to help them when they're having suicidal thoughts. And people come to you, Matthew, like going, you know, your work changed my life. You know, your work resonated with me. And I'm wondering, you know, do you guys both feel that those kind of emotional moments do they help you?
Yeah, a lot of my work hasn't really been published yet.
Sure.
So I haven't that really. Yeah, and even if when it does, I'm not sure it's going to like be a big revelation for people. I hope that it can help people at least have fun. That's kind of my goal. Right. I want people to be able to run my games and have fun.
Mm-hmm.
That's more or less where I am. If I can achieve that, then it's definitely worth it.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, and maybe the reason why I was thinking about pitching to you is because you also do work as a nurse, and so you have that similar kind of relationship with people in your other job.
Yeah.
Of people sometimes are mean, abrasive because they're in pain or they're uncomfortable and they take it on you, but also people may be genuinely very receptive and thankful because of your help with them. I mean, so. I guess it's no longer a question now because you don't have a response to it. But I mean, just I feel like there's – it can be an emotional roller coaster working in the gaming industry. And I don't want to ever sugarcoat that. It's like there are days when you're like, why is this jackass messaging me yet again? And there's other times where it's like you get that one red line back, says everybody like this, and that was the one you were worried about. And you go, oh, my God, this you the whole day you're up as a result of that. Because we're not just professionals, we're creatives, and we've got to put as much of our creativity into that as we can.
You do put a lot of yourself into your work. That's something I've learned too. I see my other work bleeding through my writing work, actually. I take a lot of inspiration from people I meet in my work. I don't ever use their name or anything that, of course. But I do, if I meet someone that really leaves an impression for me, I can, oh, you can be a character in my book. And I meet a lot of people, like a lot of people, every single day. And aside from that, even my knowledge about bodily functions and actually helps me in writing horror games. Because bodily horror is something I really know because I stand in it every single day. So that's how I combine my two jobs in a way, and they help one another.
That's really cool. I think that's an interesting perspective because, frankly, writing is a very isolating profession, so usually we don't see a lot of people in day-to-day life. So you have a huge advantage that perhaps some of us don't have.
It's something I was speaking to Clara about yesterday, and another one of our freelancers who's at the UK Games Expo, Kian Montahan, who is on Technocracy Reloaded for Mage of the Ascension, an upcoming book. And in his day job, he's a scientist. And so he was asking me for advice on how to network. And I was saying, well, as well as being able to tell prospective employers, I worked on Technocracy Reloaded that required a lot of research, it required scientific knowledge, knowledge of hard sci-fi, and so on. You can say, I'm also a scientist by trade, therefore I am able to be a science advisor on your book. There is every benefit to pulling on your own experiences, especially professional ones, and being able to put them up front and say, I can prove that I'm not just a writer. I'm also a writer that knows this and this and this.
Absolutely.
And it, especially if, in the case of Kian, if you're going for role-playing games that are sci-fi in genre, if he was to, I don't know, go up to Adam Jury, let's say, and putting words in Adam's mouth for Eclipse Phase, and he said, you know, I'm a physicist, and therefore I know a fair amount about sci-fi. Adam might think, oh, okay, I'll give him a go. So it's the exact same thing for nursing. I know, obviously, you're an intensive care nurse. So, yeah, you see a heck of a lot of bodily trauma.
Yeah, and also, like, human emotion, really. Like, we see everything. A hospital is like a house of every single emotion you can ever go through. Like, especially extreme emotions, like extreme happiness and extreme sadness, anger, too. So I feel like I have a good grasp on, like, on humanity in that way. And that's something I also, like, often like to include in my games, like, human side of being a beast, or the human side of being this and this and that. So there's something relatable for everyone in the book.
I'm going to shift gears again, because I also like to talk about process. You're one of the few people I can actually ask this question of. I meant to ask about it in our Steffi interview, we just didn't get to it. Because Onyx Path uses American English specifically, is our house style, have you found any challenges in writing in American English specifically?
I mean, I've learned the difference, I think. In the beginning, it was difficult to see the difference between when do you use a C and when do you use an S and when do you do that and this. It's not a major problem because it's more or less the same. There are some different ways to spell things and some different phrases, but it's something you learn quite quickly. And as long as you put your word to American English, then
But
I will add to that, though, because it's something that caught both of us out on Chicago by Night. So Clara wrote the Chronicle in Chicago by Night, The Sacrifice, which has been very well received.
Okay.
And it's been very well received from the manuscript, which of course came with a Kickstarter, because the book isn't out yet. Now, the book has been through editing since then, and therefore they have been required some changes to that manuscript. And some of the changes that the editor, our good friend co-host Dixie, noticed was Europeanisms. And they were things that therefore went over my head as developer, as well as Clara's head as writer. And these were things like referring to a betting shop, there being a gambling den, because... it was presented in the Chronicle as a legitimate front to a brothel.
Right.
Now, in Chicago, as it turns out, gambling is illegal. So there are no betting shops. So the legal front
is actually itself illegal.
Yes. So we actually need some kind of takeaway restaurant in front of the betting shop in front of the brothel.
That's also a cultural thing, though.
Yeah, but that's my point. Yeah. Not just us two, but a lot of Europeans need to sometimes do research. Well, on one hand, we need to do research into local American culture to get it right if we're setting a city book in America. But it also speaks to the incredible usefulness of an excellent editor who notices these things. So I know there's constantly going to be things that Clara trips up on and I trip up on when it comes to language and culture. But I think it's something I have been able to witness from Clara's first submission... from Contagion Chronicle all the way through to, I guess, what's the most recent thing you submitted to me?
Let the Streets Run Red.
Yeah, one of the Chicago stretch goals. Mm-hmm. Her English, just through writing, just through repetition, essentially, has improved measurably. Mm-hmm. It's been quite impressive. But that's how you learn.
And I think that's an interesting point for perspective, for an interesting thing about, is that... we do bang on a fair bit about form and structure, making sure that a nice clean copy comes up a lot in our discussion, and that's a valid point, but content can trump that in certain circumstances. I mean, obviously, you know, Matthew, you saw a lot in your content, and frankly, I've seen somebody writing, and your content is fantastic.
Thank you.
So sometimes it's we can work with style, you know, it's like you could teach style better than you could teach content sometimes. But at the same time, the fact that you've been willing to learn, I haven't seen since, because I only saw a little bit on the Fat Book, it's good to hear that since you've been working and improving, because that is a key point. It's like, if you can't get to that point of clean copy, it becomes harder and harder and harder to justify that. So, I mean, people are willing to put in the work. But you're right. I mean, there's a lot of cultural things that people trip up on, and I learned myself when I lived in Ireland briefly, and I realized just how much I thought I had a good grasp on European society. I had no clue, and I'm just scratching the surface, but little things about Ireland specifically and just European culture as a whole, that when I lived there, betting shops, actually that's something that me and my wife were boggling about. It's like, there's a betting shop and there's one across the street. Yeah. And you go in there and you bet on everything. I'm like, I knew there was betting here, but it didn't look the same as like seeing it on the street as a legitimate business and how polished it looked. And like, they offer you betting deals and sales. It looks just like a shop. And so that was a bit of a, I don't want to say culture shock, but more of a just, this is a new thing here. But also subtle things like how people relate to religion. The Americans have a very different relationship with religion than a lot of the European countries.
Religion, race, America, everything, obviously. Yeah, but it's something I've definitely noticed. As I say, I've noticed Clara's been improving on it. I feel like there's, and in fact, I discussed this with Dixie recently. I imagine you did as well, Eddie. That there's almost three core components to an excellent freelance writer. Mm-hmm. There's the content, or I guess the core ideas. Mm-hmm. There's the organization or timeliness, getting work in by deadlines, and there's the style.
Yep.
And if you've got two of the three of those, then you're well on your way to being someone who's hired.
But the caveat of, you better pick up that third pretty quick in the assignments.
Yeah.
Because I know that there are people who get the style and the content really well, but if they're 6 weeks late consistently, I feel like the one that's the hardest to justify is that communication and that timeliness. Yeah. If you can't get that, the other two are generally fixable. Mm. That last one, if you're just not communicating, that you don't get less chances, less passes on that one, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
So if you had to pick one of the three to nail down, definitely choose that one.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's exciting to me to see someone from a very different perspective of mine and watching her growth in the industry and seeing some similarities and seeing some differences, because I think that this industry improves when we get the new diverse voices in. But kind of related to that, this has been my first UK Games gig, so it's your second Games Expo?
That's my first.
That's your first?
Yeah. Yes, Clara. You were, well, obviously we were in Dublin.
Yeah, but UK Games Expo. Yeah.
Right, that's fair. Whereas
I went to the very first UK Games Expo back when we were in a small Masonic lodge.
Before the war.
Right. Yeah, before the war, back when I was a young man.
When dinosaurs were on the earth.
It only cost a silver shilling to get in.
Right. And then now the Freemasons are here. Now we're at the hotel, and actually the Freemasons are sharing the
Female Freemasons Order, I think their name is, or wasn't it? No, Order of Women Freemasons, because their acronym is ALF!
ALF.
But yes, they're here doing a procession through the cosplayers, making people very confused.
It is because they're in their robes. People here.
It's certainly nothing against the Freemasons, I'm sure.
It's just an interesting eclectic mix.
Yes, given there's also a Comic-Con here right now as well. So as the Freemasons do their procession past Bugs Bunny.
I cannot wait to meet the cosplayers.
You know, I just showed my age because I just said, as they do their procession past Bugs Bunny. Who dresses up as Bugs Bunny? Who watches Bugs Bunny now? Good Lord.
There are people listening to podcasts like, who?
Yeah, I'll just go and switch on the wireless.
Right.
Doze off with a little...
The pipe and a brandy.
Yeah.
So you've only had a couple of experiences then to actually meet the people you work with. I mean, obviously Matthew's a weird exception, but like other people.
Yeah, weird, that's my weird first. Thing. This is my first time.
So what's it been like then to meet people you actually only see online?
It's been great. Okay. Like you actually have you can actually create a valuable relation now. It's difficult to sit in Denmark and be like, everything is happening over there and I'm just sitting here. no one knows who I am.
Right.
So it's nice to look people in the eyes and like be, okay, now I know who Eddie is. Now I know who... You know, who Rich is, and he's a great person.
And he's your favorite.
He is. I love him. but no, there's a very big difference between having an online relation with someone and having, like, a face-to-face relation with someone, just even if it's just briefly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, I agree. There's a weird grinding noise happening somewhere in this room.
Someone with a trolley, I think.
Why is it every time we're recording in conference rooms at conventions, something weird happens in another room while we're recording?
I don't think convention rooms or conference rooms are as airtight as maybe you were led to believe.
I feel like I was lied to by somebody.
Airtight, soundproofed is what I meant.
Yeah, we close the doors and we all suffocate and die.
Yeah,
it's all the nurse in there.
Well, good thing.
The only nurse in the convention is in the airtight room, just because we need to protect her from everyone else.
It's a grand plague. No, it's a grand plague.
We can't let the one medical practitioner die. And yet. No, it's because I was playing U-Boat a lot recently. That new board game. Airtight compartments are a part of being a submarine, of course.
Is U-Boat here? I haven't seen it.
I understand it is.
Okay.
It is definitely worth picking up. I know completely going off-piste right now, but U-Boat is fantastic simulationist board game. With an app where you can look through a periscope and actually see into the North Sea. There's not much there. There's obviously some destroyers if you're in the wrong part, and minefields. That's not good. But no, it's an excellent game. Brilliant. Clara's still here.
Hello.
What do you think of U-boats, Clara? I believe your nation helped dock a lot of German U-boats in the Second World War.
Speak for all of Denmark now.
I thought Eddie was hosting the show.
No, I never keep you hosting. Matthew will always grab control whenever
Now it's the interrogation. So I believe.
How do you think I lost Vampire the Masquerade Line developer? I didn't give it up. Matthew's like, it's mine now.
Poor Neil.
Neil was briefly.
He was the regent.
Yeah, he just inherited, he held it on to pass it down the line.
Well, he had Scion. And he has delivered it to beautiful fruition.
A wonderful, wonderful game.
Yes. So, how much time do we have left,
Eddie? We've got about another 10 minutes.
10 minutes?
So, one last thing I kind of want to chat with you about is, you've run a game, a few demo games for us now. I mean, here in a couple other conventions, I know.
Yeah, yeah.
You ran Mal at one point and a couple of things. The only one I cared about was Mal, so I mean, I don't know. The games you ran. I was like, yeah, there's some other vampire stuff, I guess, but also my game. But what's it been like doing that kind of... I mean, it's one thing to run a game at a convention as a fan. It's another thing to run a game at a convention that you've worked on.
It's, I mean, I've been so lucky to run The Sacrifice 2 a couple of times. I'm actually doing something Red Moon Roleplaying.
Yeah, Red Moon Roleplaying, yeah.
Yep.
Oh, nice.
Where I'm running The Sacrifice, and Matthew is joining me.
I'm actually getting to play as a Vampire.
Player.
What?
Yes,
what?
I've never played V5.
Neither have I.
Yeah.
But I haven't played V20, though, either.
It's such a surreal experience to actually get to run your own official games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's the difference between like writing your own game and running it for your friends.
Right.
But seeing other people actually enjoying it, that is something else. It's hard to explain. It's just a feeling of pride and happiness.
Sure.
Well, when things go well.
Right.
Yeah. If they hate it, then it's not.
This game is terrible. Let's flip the table and run out. I'm so happy.
I've not tried that yet. Love
when they start pointing out the plot holes and saying, betting shops shouldn't be in Chicago. What nonsense is
I'm
this?
I'm leaving.
Yeah. This breaks my verisimilitude.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I mean, so, but you, there's that kind of special, like you said, pride or a connection to, like, you know, this is something that not only you created, but also people could then go by and run for themselves and other places.
Yeah. That's the best thing. That's the best thing that could ever happen is if they see your game and they think, oh, that could be fun to run with my friends.
Mm-hmm.
They run it and have fun. That's the best thing that could ever happen. It's better than any review, any red line, any good red line I could get back. The best thing and the most heartwarming thing is having people write to me and say, hey, I ran The Sacrifice or I ran something else. I loved it. My friends loved it. I'm like, yes. That's like...
No, I agree.
There's nothing better than that, really.
Yeah, there was a lot of praise for it on the V5 Discord channels, wasn't there, when the manuscript came out. So many people I think they were drawn by two things. One, it was the first full-length chronicle for V5, because the others were almost pared down in rules,
right,
and were essentially beta tests.
Yep.
And also, it was the chronicle that introduced us to the La Sombra to V5.
Right.
So everyone was jumping on it. It was their first chance to run something fully written for V5. And everyone was just tagging Clara or tagging me and saying, you know, this is fantastic. This is exactly what I wanted out of an intro scenario for Vampire. And that's not
good.
That's not easy to do.
No, it's like there's so many different Vampire the Masquerade ideas.
Yeah, it's one thing to write a dungeon crawl, and by no means do I mean to diminish the good efforts of people who write dungeon crawls.
Like me.
It's one thing to write a procedural, mission-based scenario where you need to get from point A to point B, and there's a definitive ending. You need to either get the treasure or you lose.
Right.
Vampire is such a social game, such a political game.
So many things can happen.
Exactly. Yeah. That it's almost impossible, it is impossible, to write every possible scenario for it. So being able to write a chronicle that covers the main beats and has enough caveats and gives enough flavor to keep the players on track without railroading them, that is a big challenge and something that even in previously published Vampire Chronicle books like Transylvania, Giovanni Chronicles, and so on. It's very difficult to maintain, but
it is
not to blow your trumpet too much, Clara, as a guest on the show. You really seem
keep going.
All right. Yeah. Well, in that case, you've got to live up to that with "Let the Streets Run Red." So good luck. No, I was very pleased with that, and all the players seem to be as well, and that's the true test.
Yeah,
no, absolutely. And frankly, that's pretty deep ends. It's like, hey, my first time is writing the very first Vampire the Masquerade Chronicle, and Vampire the Masquerade notoriously hard to write adventures for is a reason why there aren't a lot of adventures historically of Vampire the Masquerade, because you're right, it's very hard to write all the nuances and complexities and to be an introductory module and. So, yeah. I mean, it's
introducing a clan to a new system is like
there's so
thing.
Many,
yeah.
So many points of think, so many ways it could have gone wrong.
Yeah, definitely.
So, I mean, betting shops is the minimum, then. Good job.
Just don't mention them. Don't.
Retire here. You can't top this.
Right.
No, that's it.
So is there anything else that you wanted to talk about? Anything about the show that you're excited about?
Any work you want to promote?
I feel the pressure. No, I'm pick up to Let the Streets Run Red.
Okay.
Pick up Fall of London. I know it's not an honest path thing. I know that. No, it's something I worked on and something I'm proud of. So, if you like The Sacrifice, you would love.
That's how you do it, though. That's how you hustle.
Yeah. And I'm very proud of what I've written. So if you like what I've done with The Sacrifice and you haven't read it yet either, pick it up. A lot of people seem to like it.
It shouldn't be long, and Chicago by Night should be out in the wild. That will be lovely to see.
Very, very close. So if people want to talk to you in a nice, respectful way, and not just wave incessantly, how would they get in touch with you?
Well, Twitter, Facebook is always open as well. Mm-hmm. I have a Patreon as well, if you want to help me in my endeavors as a freelance writer.
And where are those accounts at?
Can I give you some names?
Put links in the description. Right. So if you're listening to this right now, do look at the description unless you're driving. In which case, don't!
Don't do that! Oh my god! Look out for the car!
And I hope my alarming don't didn't make you crash. If it did, send your bill to Rich Thomas.
Who is your favorite?
Yeah, who's excellent. Who's excellent. He covers things car collisions.
He does not.
But that aside, no, we'll put up Clara's Twitter handle and Patreon account.
Yeah. So, but if you search for Lady Gamer on different social media, you'll probably find...
Oh yeah, you're on YouTube too.
Yes, I am. Yes.
All right. So thank you very much for spending time and chatting with us.
Thank you, guys.
And now back to the outro. And we're back. It's always interesting to me, and I think, Matthew, you've pointed it out too, to interview people at different experience levels in the industry.
I think it provides as you say, it's a valuable insight for people who are listening who want to get into the industry or who are new to it themselves. It's fantastic to be able to compare experiences. But it's also good for we established few to listen to the thoughts of people who are new, because we don't really get the opportunity to sit down and interview casually our writers or editors or developers. For the most part, we have to kind of trust that they are getting on all right and their experiences are good unless they tell us otherwise. So having the opportunity to do something like this and put it on the podcast was quite enlightening.
Absolutely. And Dixie, you weren't with us, what did you think of the interview? Is there anything interesting that came out of that for you?
I learned a few things. I learned that Matthew doesn't understand how cars work because he said put your foot on the gas to stop it.
Right.
That was interesting.
Damn it. To be fair, I don't know how to drive.
And then, which is so strange when you, like, most Americans would find that strange. I know if you live in, like, New York or something, it's not super important to learn how to drive, or, like, you know, some of the, like, big cities. But, like, that's so weird to me because I can't even get to a convenience store without my car.
Right.
Like the closest public transit is, you know, a half hour plus walk away from where I live.
Oh, wow.
So, I'm in the suburbs. Anyway, yeah, it's very strange. I also learned that Matthew is canonically 85 years old because of the Bugs Bunny reference.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. You said it in the thing. I was like, Matthew.
Fine. In Britain, we haven't had these modern cartoons like The Simpsons and South Park or whatever they're called. So we've still got to make do.
I love that you referenced two cartoons, one of which came out when I was a literal child. The other one that came out.
It was deliberate.
When I was in, I think, seventh grade. Also, you are younger than me.
This is the part that I'm enjoying.
You are younger than me? I don't understand.
Modern references too. I've heard of this Justin Bieber person.
He offered to fight Tom Cruise. He challenged Tom Cruise to a fight on Twitter.
Yeah, right. That was unusual.
MMA style fight. That was very weird.
And in no context either. It was just like, yeah, I'm going to fight you. It's like, wait, what? Yeah. There's no build up here. Just one punch, dude. Okay.
Yeah, I have no idea. It's very strange.
Oh, geez. Yeah, the world is weird right now.
Right now.
Well, yeah, that's fair. The world is weird in general.
Yeah, it's been weird for a little bit.
Speaking of weirdness.
That was a really fun interview, honestly. Like, to be very serious about it. It was fun to learn a little more about Clara. Obviously, like, sometimes I don't know what all people have worked for outside of our stuff, or if they even have, like what happened with the Monica Speck interview. where I was like, what else have you worked on? And she's like, not you, just a couple mostly. And I was like, oh, I thought she's so brilliant with mechanics that I just assumed, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that happens sometimes is that someone shows up who's just a talent or is just really good at systems or something. Mm-hmm. And like, to me, because systems aren't my super strong point, I think I associate that with someone who's been around longer.
Right.
But really, some people just have a good head for systems.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's awesome. It just means that I think I occasionally make judgments based on things that aren't factual. I'm like, oh, you must have been doing this for 10 years because you understand Exalted mechanics and like how to write them. So yeah, same thing with Clara. Like, she's been so prolific with eyes over the past, you know, year or so that I've been working with her. That I guess I just didn't realize that was most of what she's done so far. But it was cool.
Go back to the Monica Spacca thing. I think you're right, because default is so much that a lot of us do work with a wide variety of companies. That to find someone who's like, no, I'm generally working with one company is a bit odd. It's not necessarily bad. I've certainly met other people who like they find a company, they really stick with it. But it does seem to be increasingly an unusual situation.
Yeah, I think in a way it's a difficulty with networking. And I know I'm generalizing widely here, but speaking for many of the European writers with whom I've worked on XPath, because they can't necessarily get out to Gen Con or Origins or one of the other big American conventions, getting in touch with other companies is harder. That, you know, they can send an email, submit samples like everyone else, but they may well have credits to back them up, but it's still isn't quite as effective, at least in my experience, as meeting representatives from those companies and being able to talk about what you love about their games and why you'd want to work on them face to face. So I know I've had that conversation with John Burke. I think he mentioned it in his interview a few weeks back, that being based in Scotland isn't the easiest place to be a freelance writer. Right. So I think a lot of writers who don't necessarily have the opportunity to get to these conventions do work for the same companies a lot. I think in part because they have fewer options, but also because there's a certain reassurance to building a bedrock of credits with one company. You know, you can build up 5 to 10 credits on books, and you can say they see me as reliable, they see me as a tried and tested hand, and now I can go out to others. I know when I started, I was probably working exclusively for XPath for maybe my first year and a half before I started going out to other companies.
I did almost all on XPath for a long time. And even then, I don't have that many credits with other companies. Just because now being in-house, like, I just keep adding more XPath credits.
Sure, and, you know, right.
Y'all pay me. but yeah, like, when I was still, like, you know, little baby freelancer working a full-time day job, I worked pretty exclusively for XPath for a while there. I had done a couple of, like, small fiction pieces for friends, but nothing huge until I started working for Rose.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, I did pretty much XPath for, yeah, probably about 2 years until I went to Gen Con and met some other people and branched out a little bit.
I mean, I do think it's fair that sometimes we find clients we just really like working with. And so we keep, if client keeps having work, you want to keep working with them. That stability, especially in the freelance life, it can be attractive. Mm-hmm. But it's more that it's odd to have, say, I only have ever worked for one client ever. You know,
That's
the part that's like a little like, oh, you haven't even talked to other people. You've even, you know, like a small 500 word thing for somebody else. You know, so usually I find at least a little bit of more exploration. But I think there's validity to, like you both say, well, of building a bedrock of credits and say, hey, I've worked reliably for client A for a long period of time. So client B, maybe you wouldn't take a chance on me when normally you wouldn't have.
Mm-hmm. Take a chance. Also, I would like to say it isn't necessarily a negative thing. Because some people are only in this writing gig because they like, let's say, our games. They only want to write for our games. So people shouldn't feel the need to work for games with which they're unfamiliar and potentially stress themselves in doing so. If they would rather just work on World of Darkness, for instance, then you just pick your assignments as and when you can and I guess, relax when you can't. That sounds lovely, doesn't it? The idea of just working on one game line, then just kicking back until the next book gets announced.
You bring that up, and actually that is a valid point. I'm sure Dixie will back me up. A lot of the Exalted writers tend to be like that. They tend to really like working on Exalted. But the Shadowrun community also is a lot like that, too. A lot of Shadowrun writers only really want to work on Shadowrun, in my experience.
Right.
So I think it's valid. Speaking of projects, what are we working on right now? Dixie, what are you working on?
At the time of recording?
At the time of recording.
Oh, God. I have like 8 things on my plate right now, and a lot of them are small. I am editing Lunars, Fangs at the Gate for Exalted, which weirdly, I know that we've talked before about Exalted being a little bit more complex mechanically and stuff like that, but Exalted is actually kind of a break from doing like Chronicles work, because I don't have to fact check anything.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I just trust that Eric and Vance got the canon right.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, and all the writers are pretty expert in it, and Eric and Vance do very thorough red lines and stuff like that. So I just kind of assume that the canon is correct. And aside from occasionally checking like a capitalization issue, to the core, I don't have to do much besides edit grammar and spelling.
So it's really just like copy editing, no real content editing.
Well, yeah, like I don't even know if you know, but like Eric Mitten is an editor.
Yeah.
So like, Exalted text tends to come in very clean. it's comma splices and, you know, occasional little typos and stuff, but it's very, very easy. And then, like, occasional formatting issues, but, like, nothing huge. And having just come off Dark Eras, like, where I had to fact check a million historical people and references and places and dates and stuff, this is so nice. Yeah, and then I'll be diving into a couple of other Chronicles projects soon, and I have a couple of small things, too. But yeah, that's all my editing stuff right now. I'm also still probably awaiting red lines for Scion Demigod, because I picked up another writing project, because I'm trying to branch out.
Yay.
Yeah, so I picked up a few thousand words, mostly on underworlds and things for Scion, so gotta see what Neil thought of those and input in his comments.
And a book you developed is coming out soon?
Oh, well, yeah, as of this recording, it's out already.
Right.
Or as of this releasing, it's out already. But, yeah, I developed Adventures for Curious Cats, which is a 3-adventure collection for Monarchies of Mal.
Mm-hmm.
That's my current only development project where I was the direct developer. And it was super, super fun to work on. It was super fun to write art notes. And I can't wait to actually, you know, see it out in the world and get a POD copy.
I know, I'm so excited.
Hold it in my hands and be like, look, it's my name.
Yay. Matthew?
Yeah. Oh, what am I working on? Nothing. I've been doing nothing for 2 months.
I completely don't believe you at all.
Yeah.
Matthew just hangs out and plays video games now. He's completely given up.
God, imagine that, if I could play video games.
Sometimes I take a day off and do that and then just work on the weekend. It's just, like, you know how every now and then you have a day where you're just like not motivated?
Yeah.
Well, instead of forcing myself to work and doing poor work and working very slowly, every now and then, like once every, you know, a couple months maybe, I have a day where I get up and I'm like, by the time 10 or 11 a.m. rolls around, I'm like, today's going to be a wash.
Yep.
I'm just not feeling it.
Mm-hmm.
And I sit my happy ass down and play Skyrim for 8 hours. And then usually that, you know, makes me feel better for the next day.
Yeah, I imagine it would for me. I think the last video game I played was some bomb disposal game, I think. It was Keep Reading or It Will Explode or something like that.
Oh, Keep Talking or You'll Explode. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, which is a very fun game. But that aside, I actually took some days off after the UK Games Expo just to relax a little and then found myself on Thursday doing work on Werewolf the Forsaken anyway. So I'm just rubbish at taking time off. At best, at least I can say that I was working at my own pace and I wasn't having meetings. And I think that makes a big difference. If you have a week where you have nothing but writing and no meetings, that's such a difference.
Yeah.
Because your days aren't as disrupted. Yeah. But other than meetings, what I have been doing or what I'm doing right now, wrapping up the development bits of Chicago Folios and Let the Streets Run Red before we send them off for approval. And also, shortly following will be Cults of the Blood Gods, which is lovely because that's 3v5 books moving along the queue. We also have, coming up for release not that far away, Night Horrors Shunned by the Moon for Wealth the Forsaken, and that's just gone through a second proof as of time of recording. It may even have been released. I don't think so, but it won't be long as once this goes up. I've been plugging Errata into Book of Oblivion for Wraith, and I have been working on the Red Lines in development for a bunch of They Came From Beneath the Sea stretch goal products too. So yeah, never a quiet moment, but it's always nice to be busy. Oh, and of course I've been implementing Dixie's fantastic edits into Dark Eras 2. And one thing that I've been doing in the case of that book is speaking with the writers. It's something new I'm trying out. So speaking with the writers, I usually just cut them off completely. So usually the process goes, of course, the writers get their outline, they do the first draft, then they get their red lines, they get to speak with the developer all throughout this process, they submit their final drafts, and providing their final drafts are up to muster, that is pretty much the writer's involvement done outside of any promotion they want to do for the book. But in the case of Dark Eras 2, I worked with a lot of writers on my chapters, and Dixie's edits were very thorough, and I know it sounds like I'm very much blowing Dixie's trumpet, but she is a fantastic editor.
You said something really nice during the interview, too, and you told the betting shop story, which I thought was great. I was like, aw.
Yeah. I did, didn't
thank
I?
Thank you. Yeah.
That's all right. And the edits for Dark Eras 2, I thought, were so good and constructive, they were worth discussing with the authors. I want authors to start learning from the edits as well as the development. And it's not going to be the case every single time. Mm-hmm. But where there are where there's issues regarding linguistics, and interestingly, speaking of language, as we have done in this episode, I've hired at least four European writers for my chapters. No, five, in fact. And it was the European writers who probably had the biggest difficulties linguistically, not because they don't know how to write in English, but because they don't necessarily know how to structure a sentence in American English.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so I've been having several meetings with those writers to go through the edits and explain, okay, so this is good, but this is what you need to do differently on the next book. And they're taking notes so that the next time around, hopefully that won't happen.
Good. Yeah. Like, I truly don't care if I occasionally have to, you know, change the word recognize so it's spelled with a Z, or remove a U from color. Like, it doesn't bother me to have to do that, because I feel like if I were trying to write in British English, I'd have the same problem.
Right.
I would definitely make mistakes. So, like, it's little stuff like that, like, I would never be like, oh god, this person's terrible, they can't do it. But there are, like, just certain turns of phrase, and as you said during the interview, things like betting shop. Like, I had to Google that. I was like, what the hell is a betting shop?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I got a general idea based on the name, but because gambling is so restricted in the U.S. Yep. to, like, mostly casinos, I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, you have to, like, what do you mean betting? Like, sports betting isn't allowed here for the most part. Like, you could do horse race betting at some places. And past that, it's just, like, slot machines and poker and stuff. And I was like, yeah, you can't. That's not a legal front for anything in Chicago.
Would you have understood or known the word bookies?
Yes, that's a very common word.
Okay, I didn't know whether that was almost entirely British.
No.
That's a common word, but I feel like it sounds archaic to me.
Yeah,
because it's definitely
colloquial.
Yeah.
It's well, like that's the kind of thing I'd expect to read in like a 1920s or 1930s novel, where they're like, "Oh, I had to go to my bookie," you know, whatever.
Mm.
Like they wouldn't call them that now, I don't think. I mean, I guess there are some
UK.
In Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, there are.
I don't gamble either, people. Like, anybody who's listening who's like, she sounds real stupid about gambling. I don't gamble. I used to work in a casino, and it made me never want to gamble ever.
Well so, I can either confirm or deny where I got this knowledge, but bookies are only slightly archaic. I mean, it's like a generation old at this point. So, like, older gamblers will still use that term. Numbers person is much more archaic, but it's the same rough thing.
Well, as we know, I am an older person because of my Bugs Bunny reference.
Right, you're 85 years old canonically.
Yeah.
I only know about numbers people and numbers games because of working in Harlem Bound.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because, you know, that they had those there.
Yeah.
In the 1920s and 30s.
I may or may not be related to people who may or may not have run numbers in the past.
Oh.
Naughty Eddie's family.
Sordid history.
Mm. I also used to have Grand Theft Auto on my Chromebook records, as well as Deborah Story.
Ooh. Cell phone noises.
Someone's popular.
It's someone else in my house has their cell phone open and I can't mute it, so that's fun.
That's fun. Well, Dixie and I will talk while you mute yourself, Eddie. But
no, it's fine. We just have fun sounds on here. I don't mind fun sounds.
Yeah, we need the
slide whistle.
Slide back.
Whistles and bongs.
Yes, we do have slide whistles. And any other projects, Matthew, or is that it?
Any other projects? The ones I gave you weren't enough.
Just double checking. I mean, that's fine. But also, you do like a gazillion things at a time, so.
All right, yeah, I'll give you some more. Contagion Chronicle. So here's an interesting thing I've not discussed on the podcast. Contagion Chronicle has had its Kickstarter conclude a while back, of course, a couple of months ago. And it was very successful. We were very happy with it, but undoubtedly there were parts of the manuscript that needed touching up. There were the difficulties I had as a developer of a book that contained a dozen game lines became apparent near the end of the process. And I don't mean the book is a catastrophe or anything like that, it isn't. But there's certain refinement that's required to make the book better. And I've been having a lot of help from Dixie, from Megan Fitzgerald specifically, who is a legend. Chris Allen as well has been lending his aid too, because what I want this book to be is compatible with any of the Chronicles of Darkness game lines. That's what it's there for. Mm-hmm. So it needs to adhere to the rules and lore of those respective game lines, and that's no small task. So I'm very grateful for their help on that. I'm trying to make the book as polished as it can be before it goes into art and layout. But yeah, that's another one that I keep returning to every now and then because different things get found and they need to be addressed.
Yeah, and it's definitely a complex book.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I just input the errata for Geist Descendants, in case anyone's wondering where that's at. So I've been working on Geist Second Edition for the past couple days because it had a fair amount of errata. There was some of it that I could ignore, but, you know, you want to go through every single piece and kind of say, like, is this valid? Is this not? Let me change this thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a typo, whatever. And so I had Travis Stout look through it first for all the mechanical stuff, and then I dealt with all the typos and everything. It was actually a really cool process for a core book. I kind of wish I'd gotten to try it on a smaller book first, but because we just changed our process. But yeah, there was a lot of stuff that did need tweaking, and a lot of it was artifacts from earlier drafts, which has happened in lots of game lines. Sure. You know, like, Geist have Root and Bloom instead of Virtue and Vice. And at some point, it was called Root and Vine. Mm. And so there was, like, two places where, like, Vine was still in there. And then there's something on the character sheet that needed to get changed because we didn't think to add this thing that we added in the mechanics. You know, like, all the little tweaky stuff. So I definitely feel you on, like, doing the Wraith Errata, Matthew, and then also tweaking Contagion post-edits. Because, you know, I edited Geist 2E, Travis has proofed it twice, and we still are finding this stuff.
Yep.
So it does go to show that, like, the errata process is super helpful. Because sometimes if you've read a book 8 times, like, you're not going to find anything anymore. Yep. Like, I have opened books that I know I have looked at 4 or 5 times and found a typo and just been like, well, shit. Like,
yeah,
I tried, but my eyes glazed right past it.
Absolutely.
And yeah, I don't think it can be undersold how any core book is a complicated product to put together.
Yes.
As a developer, as an editor, as a layout artist. But when it comes down to it, that going through a book that needs to contain all the rules necessary and all the setting necessary to play a complete game of what you've got in front of you is a big ask. I think it's bigger than a lot of people consider. It's the kind of thing that as I'm going through Mummy the Curse, I'm thinking, oh, do we need this rule? I know these rules appeared in Mage the Awakening. Have they appeared in many of the other Chronicles of Darkness game lines? Oh, they seem to have appeared once or twice. So sometimes there's things like that. And they can be really minor things like, do I need to provide the stats for all of these weapons?
Right.
Do I need to repeat these conditions that appeared in every single previous book or just a few of these previous books? And so on and so forth. Does this one need martial arts styles? It's small things like that where you don't want to completely overinflate the book, but at the same time, you want it to contain everything that players are going to want.
Right.
So it's a challenge to do any core book. But yeah, I think Contagion's been my biggest hurdle in development, I think.
That's totally fair.
I can see that. But I mean, that's a huge wreck. I mean, that's, you know, it took me 6 weeks to edit Dark Areas 2, partially because it's huge. you know, I was about 50K a week there. Right. But also partially, that's actually less than I can work as far as like quickness usually. Mm-hmm. And it was because like I was checking so many things because I not only was checking the historical stuff, but I had copies of almost every existing 2E Chronicles book open on my desktop as well.
Yeah.
So I could check the game lines to make sure terms were capitalized properly, because sometimes my brain gets confused between like Requiem and Masquerade, because I'm more familiar with Masquerade terminology overall, right. But then we don't capitalize Prince and Requiem or Clan, and like that's fine, I actually prefer not capitalizing them, but authors don't always do that properly. Right. Because they're also familiar with Masquerade. So yeah, there's so many things to like squeeze into it. And like every now and then, I think someone's mind just kind of blips, or, you know, they just aren't thinking and they type a Masquerade term instead of, or a World of Darkness term instead of a Chronicles term. And I'm like, no, we don't have that in this game line, but I understand why you made that mistake. You know, so it's just trying to like mold it into what it needs to be. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I love Dark Eras too. I think all the eras are super fun. I think it'll be a lot of fun to play. It was definitely more ambitious than Dark Eras 1, where some of the eras only had a single splat.
Right.
Or a single game line. And now they, like, everyone has at least two.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really, really well researched. It's so much fun reading them. So, and of course, Clara worked on one, the Scandinavian Witch Trials, and that was a lot of fun. I didn't know almost anything about the Scandinavian Witch Trials, so I got to learn a lot, too, from reading all the chapters.
Absolutely.
So it was super, super cool. But yeah, it's a lot of work when you're working with multiple game lines, Matthew, because even though there's only two or three per chapter in Dark Eras 2, it's still a lot. Like, I don't know how the three of y'all developed that book.
And then I certainly understand complexity, because I'm going through that myself with...
Yeah, what have you been working on?
Aberrant, actually.
Let's talk about Aberrant! Let's talk about Aberrant.
Indeed, at the time that this is going live, we will have announced Aberrant as part of our ongoing webcomic.
Yeah!
And I think I've alluded to this in the podcast, but the webcomic is actually written by Paul Jenkins, who is a legend in the comic book industry. He's been doing it for 20 years. He's contributed to people like Captain America, Wolverine, characters in DC Comics as well. As well as his own independent stuff. And he's just someone I've met at cons here in Atlanta a few times. And I was like, you know, I'll never get Paul to work on this. And he, I was like, hey, Paul, would you do this comic for this comic book role-playing game? He's like, yeah, sure, I'd love to. And it's like, what? Oh, okay, sure. that's now going out. You'll start seeing the first few pages of that. But what I was going to was, because we're making Aberrant, there's a lot of challenges with the original Trinity games mechanically that Story Path was designed to combat, as well as with Scion. And Aberrant was kind of patient zero for mechanical problems on the Trinity side. Like, Aeon kind of worked and Adventure worked just fine, but Aberrant was where a lot of people saw mechanics break down a bit. So naturally, that was going to be a big concern. And so we did some initial playtesting, got a little bit of feedback on the first round of playtesting. But also during that, we brought on Danielle Azon as our Trinity mechanics lead. She specifically handles Trinity line mechanics, whereas Ian is the overall kind of line manager, as it were.
Yeah, he's more like the Trinity creative director, right, on some level.
Yeah, exactly. You're absolutely right. He's kind of the creative lead. Thank you. I could think of
like, like Rich still has final say as far as like creative direction for the company. But yeah, Ian just knows Trinity. Like he just really knows it, and he loves it, and he has his own headcanon about it for stuff that didn't get put in originally, but mm-hmm. he also knows everything that got put out originally and knows what should change too, which is great. Like knows like what should be updated.
Absolutely. But he admitted that mechanics is one of his weak spots. With Neil more focused on Scion, we originally were kind of asking him questions about it, but Scion and Trinity started to bifurcate more and more firmly. And Danielle was heavily involved in getting the Trinity mechanics in shape. So we just brought her on. So she went through and did a pass on the Trinity manuscript combined with some playtesting stuff. And so now I'm right in the middle of deep of updating things to be closer to where Trinity finally ended up, because we wrote Aberrant while Trinity was still being finalized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's all being mind-melded, as we're calling it.
Yes, yeah. There was definitely a lot of, okay, let's get all these books synthesized. And so Aeon and Trinity went through that process and said, cool, now we need to bring you onto Aberrant to do that. And for the most part, it's fine. There's lots of things like, you know, being combined some places to spare some space. Some mechanics required a pretty heavy overhaul, but they're relatively new mechanics. Little things like we had called the different ways that you can play the game modes, but turns out that's a term in Aeon that has mechanics. Again, so we had to change that term. So it's things like that she was able to bring to bear that me, Ian, and Steve Kensing just wouldn't have necessarily noticed. So she was fantastic. But now I'm going through the complicated process of going through the intent of what the manuscript was with Danielle's feedback, pulling out key points, talking through those points with the whole team. So it's cool. It's a great process. And I think the game's going to be so much stronger for it. And then, of course, once it goes to Kickstarter, which will be in July, then we'll be able to actually get another round of playtest data from the actual Kickstarter backers to see if there's any more stuff we missed, because it's been so complicated and there has been so many different push and pull elements to it. It's getting some fresh eyes on it to say, hey, I actually put this on my table and now this piece isn't quite working. It will be immensely valuable.
Yeah, totally. That's always a useful part of the process.
Absolutely. So we are definitely over on time, but it's always nice having that occasional nice long chat about what we're at and what we're doing, I think. Kind of talk things through.
I like talking to y'all.
It's been a while since the three of us have talked. We should get together and do it's been actually a few weeks since the three of us have done just a big hour-long dive into something, which is why we're probably a little chatty today.
It's been a while.
It has been a minute since we've done like a just the three of us episode.
Mm-hmm.
You
should get
because,
on that.
I mean, technically the Scion ones were, but we were playing Scion.
Right.
We weren't talking to each other.
Right.
So we should probably start hammering out our plan for the next few episodes.
Yeah, we should definitely do that. But in the meantime, if people want to find us online, where will they talk to us? Matthew, where will they find you?
Look for me on matthewdawkins.com. There's a contact me button, and there's also links to my various different social media outlets on there.
Dixie?
Not in a Wikipedia deep dive anymore, because I'm editing Lunars, and it's much more chill.
You pulled yourself out of the hole.
Yeah. Although I did get onto a TV Tropes black hole the other day because somebody linked the TV Tropes page in the Scion Slack, and then I was on TV Tropes for an hour.
Oh no!
Yeah, it's a sickness. I just like reading about things and learning weird facts. Anyhow, you can find me at Dixie Cyanide on most social medias, and also my website Dixie Cochran, which I think also has links to all that stuff. I don't know. Meredith Gerber made it. She's way better at stuff than I am, and I'm pretty sure it's got links to all that stuff on there.
As for me, I don't have a Meredith Gerber made website yet.
You should get one.
I've asked
all
her.
All the cool kids are doing it. Me, Jacob Burgess, Matthew Dawkins, Neil Price, Erica Fassett. Like all the cool kids are doing it.
But the problem
is
she's so busy now. I don't think she has time for someone like me anymore. It's like I'm old news. She's moved on in her life. She's gone to bigger and better
aren't
friends.
Aren't you like her mentor?
Nah.
Like,
she's found other people that are much more interesting than me at this point.
I'm going to make her listen to this.
And then,
I'm
going to
send her this recording.
Minutes.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I'm going to go in and clip this out and send it to her like as soon as we're done recording. Be like, Meredith, look at what Eddie said about you.
I was thinking more like, you know, like 11:01 on Friday. I'm going to get like an email from Meredith like, Edward Webb, what have you done? But when Meredith yells at me, we'll probably be at Twitter at Eddie Fate, EddieFate. She might message me through my website, eddiefate.com, or if she's been particularly angry with me, she might message all my social media sites for Pugsteady. And so with that, thank you guys all for chatting with us. Thank you all for listening to us in our nice little kind of get together again after a few weeks. Many worlds, one pathcast.